Hey everybody, it's Michelle Fisher and welcome into A View From My Window. I thank you so much for joining me today. Today I am here with Ken August, a wonderful storyteller and filmmaker that brings his passion for storytelling and bringing you as the listener along in that story as a fly on the wall. And now he is helping us here at the Arc of Indiana put together a series of videos that talk about the many career pathways of finding work for people with disabilities. I have to say I've been working closely with Ken for a number of weeks now, and I cannot think of a better person to do these videos for the ARC. For an inside view on what the project will entail and what excites him about this whole filmmaking thing, I have the great filmmaker Ken August here with me to tell me all about it. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Michelle.
How are you?
Oh, this is really a treat to sit on the other side of the table from you. I've watched you do interviews before, but now I get to be interviewed.
This I know, and I'm so happy to interview you. We have become friends, so it's a wonderful experience. Let's talk a little bit about you first.
Okay.
And before we get into the film project, Tell me a little bit about how you got into storytelling and filmmaking.
I grew up in a family of storytellers. And perhaps other people have had storytelling at home, but it seems like everybody in my family told stories when I was growing up. I'm the fourth out of five children, and I have two older sisters and an older brother, with a big gap in between. So it was kind of like a family of three generations.
Okay.
And we got to hear stories from my mother, who talked about her childhood and the things that influenced her. My father would come home from working at the hardware store, and he had a good ear, and he would imitate accents and kind of characters that he'd meet during the day. He would come in looking for hardware and enjoying sharing a story, so he'd come right back and tell my mother as she's getting dinner ready, and we'd all listen in. So he was a storyteller. My eldest sister, Fran, really set the base for me in storytelling. She was quite a scholar, and loved stories. And as I'll tell you in a little bit, she really took storytelling seriously and read folklore extensively and loved sharing it with me and my younger brother, Carl. My older brother, Dave, didn't tell stories as much as my sisters, but every now and then he'd be put in charge of us. They'd tell him, Dave, go put the boys to bed. And he would take us upstairs, my brother Carl and I, and we'd lie on either side of Dave. He'd sit in between the two beds, and he'd start to tell us these outrageous stories that usually involved our dog Slugger and our cat Dinah. I mean, little kid stories, and lots of bodily functions. We would just laugh. And then he would get upset because we weren't ready to go to sleep. And,
sure, but he's the one that did it, right?
Yeah. So he loved to tell a story. He was still kind of getting a sense of control.
Right. And he had no control telling you these stories,
No. And he's still like that. He's pretty funny.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your mom. Was a worker. She worked quite a bit.
My mother was a registered nurse.
Okay.
And worked in private offices for the most part, and she also helped out at the family hardware store in later years. And there was a summer in particular when Mom went back to Lancaster, Ohio, which is where her family, her people, are from, to help take care of her elderly mother and father, leaving my sister Fran, who was 16, 17 or so at the time, in charge of the family.
Mm-hmm.
She says, Fran, I want you to take care of everybody, but in particular, I want you to teach the boys how to use their imaginations.
Yes.
Because the older sibs used to complain that Carl and I would watch too much television. I said, Mom, their brains are going to turn into oatmeal. And so Mom took that to heart and gave Fran the assignment, unplug the TV. And so that summer, Fran took us through a kind of a course of creative things. Mm-hmm. Some of these things were things my mother had done with her. And so she turned around and passed them on to us. And we pretended to go fishing off the back of the living room couch.
You know,
we pretend to hold fishing poles and zzz, doink, and reel in a fish. She'd tell us stories. She'd play music on our stereo back at the house. And we'd pretend to be wild animals and try to move like them and move to the music. So really, it was just all kinds of creativity. She just had a real knack for it. She hadn't really taken that kind of thing in school, but it was her gift, really, that she passed on to us.
So let's talk about how that gift then, not only was it a good bonding experience for all of you, but it shaped you as a filmmaker as you honed your skills to actually make it into a career. So how did that, when you honed your skills, how did that, all of that come into the filmmaking process now?
Well, I have learned to look at the world through story. I see stories as cognitive packages that contain human experience. And it seems like we're hardwired for it, Michelle. I mean, we seem to respond to stories.
Sure.
Now, you can give somebody a laundry list. You can give somebody a list of the things you did that day. Not a story. Mm-hmm. But you give them a sense of character. You give them a sense of setting, of the time. You give your person in the story, which may be yourself, you give them a sense of a challenge or something that comes up. Something, it could be something good or something bad that comes along, and how you get through that. And then in the most powerful stories, there is a change in the way the central character sees the world. A paradigm shift, if you're familiar with that term, or just you look at the world differently. So I saw stories as being a very effective technique for sharing experience, first as a storyteller, but I began to learn other art forms. I took theater when I was in high school and college. I was a professional puppeteer for for a year. I mean, I've done so many different things, it's not even funny. But all of these different art forms were related to story. In some cases, it had to do with sounds that people make. In other cases, with puppetry, you're really learning how to act through the body of this otherwise inanimate object. And you learn how to express emotions and sense of purpose with this object, and you're that much more aware of what your own body does. And so it was good experience for thinking of different ways to express story.
So that's how you fell in love with it.
Very definitely. I found so many applications. Now, with specifics leading to filmmaking, we had the odd movie camera at home. But, you know, back in the old days, last century, you had to shoot the film, and then you had to use the entire reel up, then you'd send it away, get it developed, it would come back, and you'd play it.
Right.
I didn't really have much of a part of all that. But later, we got a video camera. I mean, a big, heavy...
Gargantuan.
Well, the kind of thing where you had something the size of a carry-on suitcase strapped over your shoulder. Then you had a separate camera, all connected with a cable. And you got to use that to film. And you had these big cassettes. So my mother bought the family's first video cassette recorder so that my father could see how he looked when he threw shot put. Because he was a champion shot putter and discus thrower when he was a teenager, and he continued to do that as a middle-aged man and later in retirement. But she thought it would be helpful for him to be able to see himself. And I eventually inherited that and began making films. And I took production courses in college and have bought many cameras since. But I think what I would call myself probably more accurately than a filmmaker, since I really haven't handled film cameras for movie purposes, is there's a new term, Michelle.
I've heard of this new term. You were telling me this. It's digital storytelling.
Digital storytelling. That's right.
Which really gets your emotions within a short period of time. You pull people in within a short period of time, right?
Yes, they are typically short multimedia experiences, and they are pretty much tied to the fact that they are shown online.
Okay.
And it's digital storytelling because you're using still images, you're using short movie clips, and other kinds of things readily accessible on a computer usually with a narrative over the top of it. And they're usually short. I mean, mm-hmm. 5-6 minutes. It's a whole range of storytelling that people do these days. And I seem to have a knack for it.
You do. I honestly will tell you, that's my opinion. You do. As we talk about digital storytelling and really getting on, getting to people's emotions quickly, you started out as a host of a show at Riley Children's Hospital, where the show was in the hospital, and you know, you made children forget about their worries a little bit, mm-hmm. And smiles would come. So how did storytelling come into play there? What did you see that you were like, oh, this is effective in getting kids to pay attention to stories?
Okay. I went to Riley Hospital after I'd been a librarian for over 10 years. And they were looking for someone to do puppetry and to run their, they have a closed circuit television station, which I think is still going at, mm-hmm. at Riley Hospital. And so the general idea was we were going to use television to help children cope with hospitalization.
Sure.
A diversion, if you will.
Sure.
A friendly diversion. One of the biggest problems in a hospital is that children, I mean anybody really, but children especially are away from family, they're away from their familiar surroundings, they're away from their toys, their friends, they aren't going to school. How do we help them deal with that on top of being sick? And so we used our television station to provide them with interactive game shows to participate in. They could call in and tell us what movies they wanted to see on the air. I had this huge mouse mascot puppet.
Yes, I hear about that. JW. I heard about the huge mouse puppet.
And so my year as a puppeteer back in Wisconsin had really came into play there.
And he had a camera, didn't he?
We used cameras all over the place. Okay. We had two cameras that were used in, it was actually a playroom that we mm-hmm. used as a studio for a show called The Hello Show, where we said hello to every child out in the different wards, the burn unit, the cancer unit. At the time, they were broken up by age groups. And we let the kids know that we knew they were there. We'd say, hi, good morning, Jimmy. And we'd show artwork the kids brought in. But then I'd go out before the program with a small camcorder and run around the hospital, quite literally, filming people waving. These were kids who could not come into the room for the program. And so within the hour, they would be on the air. They would be on television. And their nurses would say, Jimmy, I saw you on TV. Mm-hmm. And it was a great thrill, great thrill.
Absolutely.
We did other things with cameras too. And what I'm really, really proud of, for anybody who has ever been to Riley Hospital, you've seen children being pulled along in these little funny little red wagons, and it's a nice way to get around. You can carry a child and, mm-hmm. and a bunch of stuff, mm-hmm. so they're practical.
Right.
But it means the child's sitting down rather low. And there was a lot of remodeling going on at Riley at the time, just prior to the blend in with Clarion Health. And so they had installed new food venues and things on the first floor, and there's a lot of different structural changes. And it occurred to me that we ought to take a look at this new view of the hospital from a child's point of view.
I love that.
And so I took JW Mouse, mm-hmm. put him in one of the red wagons, set up a camcorder in his lap, pointing up, kind of at the angle where an adult looking down at the wagon would be right in the camera's view. And we walked around the hospital. And people, of course, recognized JW and me. And they wave, they come over and visit. But we'd walk along the food court, and you'd get to see, oh, you can kind of see the underneath the counter. And in the gift shop, gee, most of those things are up too high for a child to see. So it brought a new perspective. And I know that at one point, the architects took an interest in seeing that angle. So just different ways of using cameras is something I really enjoy, you know, finding these new applications. So not everything I do is related to story. It's just being creative, being creative. And it is definitely something that I have devoted my life to.
And I can tell how you film and how you listen to people's stories. You can relate to them, especially in a disability standpoint. Because what do you deal with?
I deal with dyslexia every day, every day. And for folks who are not as familiar with dyslexia, it is a learning disability, and it primarily affects one's ability to read written material. It's sort of a misnomer that people see things reversed on the page. Pretty much print looks like print to me, but it takes me longer to process it, and my spelling has always been questionable, and so thank goodness for spell check.
Exactly. Thank you for that, whoever invented that, right?
Yeah, well, it's still evolving. Anyway, not being able to learn the way that other people did when I was going to school, I mean, I felt pretty stupid for the first 10, 11, 12 years of my life. I worked extremely hard, but I didn't get to where everybody else was.
So did storytelling sort of take the pain of that away, that you were different?
That's an interesting question. What storytelling did for me when I was having trouble reading books was it provided a bridge to literacy. When I was not yet reading and would more likely have been reading had I not been dyslexic, my sister Fran told us about the books she was reading, and that made me and my brother Carl, both of us are dyslexic, it made both of us want to read that much more. Now, tutoring is what really turned the table for me. I had 1 year of really good but intense tutoring, and it was not to cure dyslexia. It was to figure out how I learned. And so I learned an awful lot about myself. I learned how hard I was going to have to work to keep up with everybody, but I did. And going back to the theme of creativity now, when you don't learn the way that other people do, when you cannot do things the way that other people do, and you have to find a way around it, almost by definition, you have to be creative, because you're creating your own path through this obstacle. And so my life story is about overcoming obstacles, and I'm very ready to hear that in other people's lives too.
Wow, that is so awesome. I'm thrilled that you're able to do this video project. Let's talk about then what piqued your interest in doing this video project for the Ark of Indiana.
Well, John Dickerson
came
to talk to me. Yes, John is wonderful. He has corralled an unusually gifted group of people here at the Ark of Indiana. And he came to me and said, Ken, I know you're a storyteller. I know you make films. Let's talk about what you might do for us at the Ark of Indiana. And without giving you the full background of this, where we are today is we realize that there is a need to give people hope, to give people inspiration, people who are either still searching for some kind of satisfying work, and that might be a job where you're being paid, or it might be volunteer experience, but looking for something meaningful. And other people who may not have a job or looking for a job, people who are in a job and are not real satisfied with it, and they want something better. So here are people who need some inspiration. So we looked at the population.
We've had lots of meetings on this.
Yes, we have. It's been a group effort. I come to the Ark of Indiana with my own experience, but I really depend greatly on the combined experiences of the people here who listen to people every day talk about the challenges and the hardships. So in working with the talented staff here, we have narrowed it down to, we want a film project now that will provide us with half a dozen or so short videos, you know, well designed to be on the internet, accessible to the world, These short videos are going to show a number of different situations, one person at a time. We'll show somebody who currently works in a workshop and is exploring the possibilities of working outside of that arena. People who are not yet employed but are currently looking for work. People who have found unusual jobs based on their strengths. So we're looking for inspiring stories. And we'll start off with this half dozen or so and then kind of go from there. But within this next year and a half, you will see these stories coming up on the Arc of Indiana website. And we're still open. We're still looking for people.
I remember you talking to me when we first met about how, you know, it's important to listen to people as you hear them tell their stories. And how do you get, especially with a person with a disability who may not think that they're that great, how do you get the essence of them on camera to show up on film?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I approach it one person at a time. I don't expect a formula to work with everybody. And so my process as a filmmaker is to first talk to the people who are involved with this person's story. Not everybody that we're going to film will be completely articulate. And so we'll talk to family members. We'll talk to people who have worked with this person and find out the essence of the story. And then, given that this is a story of inspiration, it's a story that shows this individual facing challenges and working things through, sometimes with the help of individuals, sometimes with just a determination that this person has developed over time to get it done. And so we'll look for the story that way. It's really interviewing, knowing what questions to ask, and listening very carefully.
Let me ask you, I was doing my research on you, and obviously I've talked to you too, but let's say the camera could talk, and it could say something about who you are and where it's been. What would it say? Can you tell? I've been around you. Your influence is really good on me.
Okay, so if I hear you correctly, it's a camera that can talk and it can kind of give us a perspective of who we're looking at. Well, it would say, here is this man who is still very much in touch with the child inside and is in love with story and wants to help other people share their stories. I think that would be it.
When you're talking to people with disabilities, is that something that you put in their minds that they don't have to lose, you know, they may be teased or they may be, you know, they may have hard knocks in their life, but do you tell them, you know, bring out your fun side, bring out the child in you and bring out the what makes you you, you know, don't hide behind the walls of this, you know, resentment or, you know, whatever emotions they're feeling. Do you approach it like that when you're interviewing them?
Those stories do come out when I interview people, certainly. Having had bad experiences make for some stories that sometimes people will cling to. But the whole approach, the whole blueprint that the Arc of Indiana has brought up this year is looking toward the positive side and looking toward people's strengths. And so one way you describe what kind of strength you have is you show how you've used it. When I'm interviewing people, I'll ask them about what challenges have you faced? And then, how did you manage to get through that? And what were you shooting for? You know, Michelle, one of the basic questions that people who are self-advocates, part of Self-Advocates of Indiana, something I just realized from talking to our self-advocates here at the office, our leaders, and it's the question of, what do I want? Learning how to ask for what you want mm-hmm. is part of being a self-advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And so in talking to these people and helping them identify good stories to use when they're talking to the public, this theme has come out. Sure. If you're looking for something that's more satisfying than what you've got, you need to have an idea of what it is you really want. And it's no mystery that most people who deal with disabilities want the same things mm-hmm. that a majority of the people in the world want.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be loved. They want to be respected. They want to have meaningful work to do. They want friends. They want a comfortable environment. All of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I talk to people, the challenges come up, the way they've gotten through comes up, and I'm hoping that when people see these short videos, that they will think, this seems a little bit more possible.
Hmm.
Another purpose of the videos will be to direct people to good sources of information.
Sure.
Just like your blog that you've started, and congratulations on writing a blog.
Thank you very much.
Your blog is a way to help people who are listening to this broadcast, for instance, find out more about who I am and about the film project. And I guess that kind of leads up to how they do that now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Ken, I have to say I am thrilled that you are here. I'm thrilled that I've met you. I'm thrilled about your passion. I'm thrilled that you want to tell people's stories because people with disabilities need that story to be told.
Yeah.
And this video project is how to do it. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your heart mm-hmm. and your passion.
Shall we give them the address to go to?
We should. Well, we want to hear your story. Ken says everybody has a story, and Ken wants to hear about you. So, how to get involved? Well, go to the Arc of Indiana's website, www.arcind.org, and tell us your wonderful, inspiring stories because you are important to us. I want to thank you to Ken and to my viewers as well for listening today. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.